China, Twitter, Minneapolis. Jeez. President Trump has his plate full this morning, and we'll add to it with adjustments to the CARES Act, another slaughterhouse shutdown, and a struggling biofuel industry, including 2014 and 2015 waiver what? Seriously? 5- and 6-year-old waiver requests? You have got to be kidding me!
Live from the longest holiday shortened week on record via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we cap off the week with our Friday for Everhull panelists, Sean Haney, Pam Johnson, and today, Randy Russell. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis, I do not disagree with you very often because, you know, you're usually right. I mean, come on, well, let's face it. Let's check
most of the
tape.
Time, usually.
Let's check tape on this. But this was a very, very, very quick holiday shortened week for me.
You think?
Oh, whoo, man, unbelievable.
Sounds like you've been slacking.
No, it's because we were also planning for next week, which is pork week, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. Yep. But no, this week has just absolutely flown by, and I was actually thinking it might be nice to have another day on here just to make sure that I get everything done that needs to get done.
You're killing me. You're killing me.
I'm
done. I've had it.
I'm sorry.
I've had it. I've still got stuff stacked up here on my desk.
Well, no, but wait, you've also gone ahead and started your side hustle with that niche lawnmower repair service. So
yes, I did do it to myself. I mean,
right.
And it takes time to build a business, you know, to put in the legwork to get it off the ground.
Well, not only that, to get your business, your side hustle off the ground, you're going to have to drive around the hometown and just be tossing those trampoline springs into the middle of the deep grass.
That's not a bad idea. That's almost like government work. Create a problem so you can solve it. I like that. You got something figured out there, brother.
Oh, wow, man. That's a pretty good plan you got going there, buddy.
Yeah,
pretty good plan.
We'll see how she goes.
President Trump, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this, so I'm going to let you jump right into the news. What do you got going?
Sure. Yeah. You were starting to say President Trump,
who
will deliver an address later today in reference to China's tightening policies on Hong Kong. Trump said yesterday, quote, "We are not happy with China. We are not happy with what's happened." But Trump did not specify exactly why he was unhappy. The president is set to sign a measure that would punish Chinese officials for placing more than 1 million Muslims in internment camps.
Yep.
China says Hong Kong is an internal measure, calling Trump's comments, quote, pure nonsense. The U.S., Australia, the U.K. and Canada have released a joint statement criticizing China for breaking its international obligations regarding Hong Kong. Now we're going to throw a Hong Kong log onto this whole fire.
Right. Yeah, there's Hong Kong. There's the treatment of the Muslims. There is the phase one. There is the origin of the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. It is amazing to me, but at the start of 2020, Davis, we felt like we were getting that list whittled down.
It really
did. And yep. And now it's longer. The list of grievances between the U.S. and China is longer than it's ever been.
Well, maybe I mentioned it before. I'm just getting ready to send this
India.
Month's landowner newsletter. India's in there, too. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
What I did was I took all the comments starting on May 5th about the Chinese controversy over the phase one, the COVID-19, this thing. And just it's fascinating to see how that conversation escalated so quickly.
Yeah.
And as you said, thousands of Chinese troops have been dispatched to the vast border with India, some crossing several miles into territory claimed by its neighbor in the region where Tibet touches Kashmir. Two brawls took place earlier this month. China's muscle flexing may have been prompted by India's buildup of roads and other infrastructure in the region, which make it easier to send patrols to remote areas. And I understand the border there is just a little bit foggy, and China's encroaching into some territories there where they're unwelcome.
Well, I'm sure... You know, in this day and age of GPS and being able to walk to a spot, I'm sure that the border is well marked. the willingness to ignore that border, though, is what is a major concern here. One other thing on the Hong Kong, the list of countries that are willing to offer up emergency visas to Hong Kongers so that they can come, so that they can get away and and escape the what is happening in Hong Kong. That list of countries is growing. That is just going to create even more tensions between China and the rest of the world.
And did I see citizens born in Hong Kong before 1997, is it, still carry a British passport? And so the UK is stepping up to help them out.
300,000 allowing that. But in such a huge city, that's barely enough.
Drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Well, Chip, in response to concerns from employers struggling to stay open during the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S. House has approved a bipartisan measure that would ease requirements on billions of dollars in small business loans. The House bill reduces the level of Paycheck Protection Program funds that must be used for payroll and gives borrowers up to 24 weeks to use the funds while extending the deadline to rehire workers to December 31st. But the bill still must pass through the Senate, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that yesterday with Mike Watley from the National Restaurant Association. And we were basically talking as they were voting on it.
Yep. That's
and
right.
It, very, very much in support of some of the adjustments that have been that have passed the House to that CARES Act and how the PPP is implemented.
Mm-hmm. The National Pork Producers Council has urged the Senate to adopt House provisions in the next coronavirus aid package to help hog farmers with costs of euthanizing animals while expanding direct payments and providing more mental health services. NPPC President Howard A.V. Roth called the House Heroes provisions, quote, a lifeline for farmers.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's go ahead, buddy.
Well, I was just going to move on to the next one. You got anything on the NPPC? No?
Not yet. Not yet, I don't. Yep.
Right on. Top official says there are 58 active investigations into meatpacking facilities, although it may be months before results are released. Lauren Sweat, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health, said the agency is focused on the meatpacking industry and that the agency has daily phone calls with the USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service, which has employees on site at every plant. And finally, yesterday, House Democrats attacked OSHA for failing to protect workers from the coronavirus. Representative Alma Adams, who chairs the House Education and Labor Subcommittee on Workforce Protections, accused OSHA of being invisible during the pandemic. That's according to the Washington Post. Now, during the hearing, a top OSHA official dodged questions about the coronavirus risk posed to meatpacking workers and employees in other essential sectors. I think we're probably going to see more of this kind of talk in the weeks ahead, Chip.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. I'm glad that you mentioned NPPC President Howard A.V. Roth.
He
is going to be on the Farmer Forum next week on Wednesday, along with Randy Francis, pork producer from Eastern Iowa.
Awesome. Yeah.
And that is going to kind of anchor our Pork Week coverage, Davis. Mm-hmm. We've got Week coming up next week. Actually, we're going to kick it off. We are going to kick it off this afternoon, and we are going to talk all things pigs and pork with Christine McCracken from Rabo Agri-Finance. Boy, she keeps track of what is happening in that hog industry. We'll get to it. All right, we got the free-for-all next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Join AgriTalk the first week of June for Pork Week, paying tribute to the pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and HiPor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
Yeah, we may have to stock up on bacon for next week, and pork chops, and pork roast, and pulled pork, and ribs. I can even do with a nice old ham sandwich from time to time. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got a free-for-all going. Let's start with Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Sean, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've got a lot to cover today and bring in Iowa farmer Pam Johnson. Pam is past president of the National Corn Growers Association. Pam, welcome back. Boy, we've had in some cases in northeast Iowa, we had just the right amount of rain. In other cases, we got too much, didn't we?
Yeah, rivers are all up, but actually the crops here look really good.
Yeah. Yeah, and now we've got sunshine. We're not going to have real hot temperatures for the next couple of days, but we've got some sunshine on the way. The humidity that we had has moved out, and it has moved over to Randy Russell out on the East Coast in Washington, D.C. Randy Russell of the Russell Group, it's good to talk with you, Randy. How are you?
Chip, we're doing great. Thank you for having me, and thanks for having me on when nothing's going on around the world. So it's great, and great to be on with Pam and Sean again.
Excellent. Randy, I said this at the start of the show. At the start of this year, it felt like we were getting that list of grievances between the U.S. and China. We were checking some of those off the list, and it felt like we were getting rid of them. Now I don't know if the list has ever been longer than it is right now, and President Trump at some point this morning is going to hold a press conference, and after the tweet that he sent this morning, it was the shortest tweet that he's ever sent, all capitals, China, exclamation point. It makes me wonder just what he has in mind for some sanctions on that, the second biggest economy in the world.
Yeah, Chip, you know, I think we have to kind of put this whole China situation in perspective. You know, 23 years ago, the British government, via agreement with the Chinese government, turned over Hong Kong, as we know, to China. And yet we have given it a very special status, meaning in terms of trade, in terms of travel, in terms of visas, in terms of commerce. Hong Kong has always been held in a special status in terms of its relationship with the United States. With this national security law that China has just put in place, and I think it takes effect in September, basically Hong Kong is now going to become like any other Chinese city. And that is very problematic, I think, for us in the United States as a matter of our relationship with China, also with our allies around the world and their relationship with China. And so I think the president, and this is very bipartisan, there are Democrats in Congress that feel very strongly about this as well. The question is, what will the president propose to do? Will the T word come up, as I call it, and that's tariffs? Right. Will he talk about potentially pulling back from the phase one agreement? Will he talk about restricting travel and visas? My guess is the rhetoric will be strong. Most of the action will likely be delayed to see if they fully implement this come September.
Okay. Does he think much about phase one trade agreement anymore, Randy? It seems like it's not the front burner issue that it once was. That is for sure.
I think the administration is very committed to it. You know, when you talk to USTR and USDA, clearly the numbers in terms of buying by China have been behind. You know, they're supposed to buy $36.5 billion. Most of this was pretty much back-end loaded for this year anyhow when the market is more ours. So I think you're going to see pork sales pick up, assuming we don't get into a huge match here over Hong Kong. And certainly soybeans sales pick up as we get into the fall. And, you know, if we get in that, I don't think we're going to get the $36.5 billion, Chip, but I do think we're making pretty good progress on it.
So, Pam, it sounds like what Randy just said is those that need to be watching trade are watching trade, and that makes me feel a little better.
Well, as a farmer, I'm shaking in my boots, you know, and the last number I read is out of the 36, they've imported $3 billion. Is that right, Randy?
Pam, I think for the first quarter, if you use USDA statistics, it's $3 billion. If you use Chinese statistics, who believes them, it's $5 billion.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, all I could think of, Chip, was when you said shortest tweet ever is like the shortest Bible verse ever. It's what farmers are going to do. It's like Jesus wept. You know, we just think we're getting over the hump and we're going to see light at the end of the tunnel and some normalcy in trade. And then we're worried about what the sanctions are going to be and if we're going to go in there alone. And then we're watching as Brazil sending a lot more soybeans to China. So I hope it's just strong rhetoric and that we can work this out.
Right. Sean?
Yeah. Well, you know, for the true China hawks, trying to separate the U.S. And China relations economically, it's not necessarily in the favor of farmers. You know, for there was very curious comments by the president this week on through Kudlow, who, as Jim says, talks way too much in regards to the phase one deal. My reaction sort of was that the president's in this area of comfort with farmers where I think he's got to be confident at this point that he has their support in 2020. And he really likes to talk about making them whole and things like that. So I wonder if he's just kind of moved on from it a little bit, although I don't mean that he doesn't care about it. It's just this issue with Hong Kong and what's going on the China-India border with the militaries of both countries. Those are way bigger issues and have way bigger implications in the global political scene than how many soybeans got shipped from the U.S. to China. So maybe it makes sense that he has moved on from the phase one deal if you really look at it.
Right. Randy, do you think that President Trump can rely on the rural vote to come through for him like it did in 2016?
Let me put it this way. I don't think he gets reelected unless that does happen. It has been a critical constituency for him. It's been critical to him, particularly in the very close states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. The rural vote was critical for him, given the fact that he won those three states by a combined 78,000 votes. The ag and rural vote is critical to his success. So I don't think he is taking it for granted, but he can't afford to take it for granted because that is a key constituency of his. And I don't see how he gets reelected without having a very strong turnout in the rural areas for him.
Okay. All right. You know, Pam, I'll speak first. Just in my conversations with groups and with individual producers, the support at this point in 2020 for President Trump, I don't know if it's as strong, because in 2016, there was this attitude that, hey, watch this. We're going to sneak up on everybody with President Trump. Just watch how this is going to happen, or with candidate Trump at the time. Now, I'm not hearing. There is still very vocal support for President Trump in the middle of the country. I just don't know if it's as widespread as it was in 2016.
I would agree with you. And, you know, I've got some very good Republican friends also, and they are so hurting right now, whether they're livestock farmers or involved where their markets are ethanol plants. And, you know, it comes to a point where you have to look beyond your party and look at your business and your ability to survive and get the pencil out and see if you can take another 4 years of what we've gone through the last 3 years.
Chip, one thing on this, in the end, elections aren't even about parties in the end, as Pam just alluded to. It's about candidates.
Right.
And it's about the nominees and their vice presidential partners,
yes,
so to speak, in this. And so, you know, it comes down to two candidates and their vision for it. And let's face it, since about the earlier this year when COVID-19 hit, the world has substantially changed. The economic situation has substantially changed. I mean, we've got 40 million people have filed for unemployment benefits. So it's a real about what the vision is going to be going forward. Whoever is the next president come January of 2021 has their hands full in terms of the budget, the world situation, and the U.S. economy.
Absolutely. And the choice, you said it, Randy, it's the candidate, not the party. And I think a lot in the middle of the country are looking at the candidate on the Democrat side and saying, well, that's not much of a choice either.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, who is taking a break from finishing up the front page of Pro Farmer newsletter this morning. Join us. We've got a little pressure on the last trading day of the month on corn and soybeans. What's going on?
Well, I'll start with corn, and we saw follow through to yesterday's corrective gains overnight, but we didn't take out Thursday's highs. And then we started to fade a little bit, and then we dropped below the 50-day moving average. And so now we're in the midst of a pullback from those five-week highs that we posted yesterday. On the soybean side of things, I think a lot of it, we saw the meal market. It's been under pressure recently. It's under pressure again. And there's some concern for soybeans on the U.S.-China relations front. And President Trump will apparently address some of that later on today. Yep. There's some kind of an announcement coming up on U.S. and China.
Absolutely. Okay, wheat is trading to the upside. That's a nice little move going.
Yeah, we've seen quite a few of the crop estimates out of the European Union, especially Eastern Europe and the Black Sea region, decline this week. And so that's given us some support. We've also got quite a bit of heat coming into the plains. And so that'll put some stress, late season stress, on the HRW crop.
Pressure on the livestock trade.
Yeah, really, disappointing performance in hogs in general this week. We ran up the first 2 days, and now the last 2 days have been under pressure, and we're lower for the week at the moment. So not a very good price performance there. On the cattle side of things, we ran up to the top of the range but didn't get a breakout, and then as a result, we're pulling back a little bit this morning.
Good stuff. Have a good weekend, Brian. We appreciate it, buddy. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Shop Machine Repeat's Spring Price Slasher Sale now through May 31st online at machinerepeat.com/sale.
Crickets are singing in a lightning bug. All right, welcome back to a free-for-all on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Iowa farmer Pam Johnson, Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, and Randy Russell from the Russell Group. Pam, did you make the trip to the FSA office this week to sign up for CFAP?
Yes, done.
Okay, how'd it go?
It was pretty seamless process. You call them, make an appointment, drop your paperwork off, and that's it.
Okay, good. Good. You know, some of the offices out there I'm hearing are still closed. They're just taking they're taking reservations, I guess I would call it, for...
They're closed, but they're working. They're closed, but they're working. And so all you have to do is make a phone call. At least, maybe it varies from county to county, but I would say that the process here was seamless. We've got great people working there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Randy, what do you make of the CFAP program and how it's been designed?
Chip, as Pam just alluded to, first of all, I want to congratulate all the local county FSA people and the state FSA people. As Pam said, they've been great and are working under duress and have had a lot coming at them between trade mitigation payments and now this CFAP program and then the regular farm program. So my hat's off to them and the workload that they're facing. Chip, it is a bit complicated, to be quite honest, and it had to be because of the funding sources. It's a total of $16 billion in direct payments. Some of that funding came out of the CARES Act, as we know, about $9.5 billion, and then the other $6 billion came out of the Commodity Credit Corporation. Look, this program was really focused, is focused on losses incurred on the 19 crop, I think you're going to see Congress in the next COVID package, which will probably be finished up sometime in July, that will increase the Commodity Credit Corporation's borrowing authority from $30 billion to maybe $50 billion, and will provide then more funding for another COVID package that will focus more on the 2020 crop. So it is a bit complicated. There have been a few things that, I've heard some complaints for some growers, particularly in the specialty crop arena where the program isn't overly effective for it. But I think a lot of that is this program is focused on 19 losses. The next package is going to be focused on the 2020 losses.
When do you think that package might come? Because are you talking about the HEROES Act there, Randy, or some whatever yes. the HEROES Act looks like when it gets through the Senate?
Yeah, so Chip, the House passed their HEROES yep. Act, about a week and a half ago. It's a $3 trillion, which is more than we spent in the other three packages combined. We're about $2.9 trillion now. It passed on a partisan vote in the House. I think that was a bargaining ploy on their part. The Senate is starting to look at what they're going to do. It's going to be smaller, more targeted. A couple of issues that are really important. One is liability protection for businesses that are reopening now. And they want to make sure the trial lawyers don't come after them with class action suits. So that's a big issue. Another issue is the unemployment compensation that was been put in place, the $600 a month. You know, if you combine that with state unemployment in some states, about half the states at the lower end of the wage scale, that's a disincentive to get people to go back to work. So there's a right. focus on how do you adjust that and maybe reward people for going back to work rather than not. That's a big issue. So I think we'll get it done in July. They'll ultimately get it to get a compromise worked out, but it's going to be much smaller. But it will include additional ag assistance, which I think is good news for our nation's farmers and ranchers.
Yeah, well, Pam, go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was just going to say that I think what we're seeing here, too, is that once you get on this train of ag programs like this, these ad hoc programs, it's really hard to get off. And I wonder now, what would it take for us to stop talking about the next program? Right? We're just starting the applications for this one, and we're already focused on the next one. So, I'll throw it back to you, Chip. What has to change?
In my honest opinion, what happens is, in my lifetime of farming, when things get complicated at the FSA office is when things are falling apart around the world and it's global trade. And so for me, it's a very simple answer, but not simple to accomplish, is let's get back into a market-oriented arena for farmers to be able to sell their products on the world stage.
Yeah,
and it's domestic stage.
At some point, Sean, to your question, I mean, reality is going to have to sit in here about how much we're going to run up the credit card. Right now we're sitting at $25 trillion in total debt. Our GDP before we got into this was about $21 trillion, but it shrunk, as we saw in the first quarter, by 5%. So at some point, we can't just keep acting like we've got an unlimited credit card here. And I think that economic reality is going to come to roost. I think this will be whatever Congress does in July. This will be the last COVID package. I don't think we're going to have another because, frankly, we can't afford it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why on the Senate side of things, they said, okay, we need to move forward and we need to start to consider some of what the next package is going to look like, but let's make sure that we understand what the CARES Act funding provided for the economy and how that is performing out there. You know, yesterday, guys, I gave the House a lot of credit for being willing to take a look at the Paycheck Protection Program in particular, and saying, listen, you know what? It was a case of ready, fire, aim in this case. And they needed to come back and do some tweaking on that to make it more effective and going forward. And I've complained a couple of times about that because they're repurposing that program. The program started as a stimulus package for the economy. In other words, keep money in those employees' hands so that they can spend money if they have an opportunity to do it and generate some economic activity. It is transformed, right, Randy, to more of a business support program?
Yeah, Chip, I actually think the purpose of the program was to keep people on the payroll as they saw unemployment rising. And that's why the program was set up that that you had to spend 75% of the funds for keeping all your employees on. And if you did, then the loan would be turned into a grant. The House, as you alluded to, just passed a bill that would lower that number from 75% down to 60%, so that you have to spend 60% on your employees, and then the rest could be used for rent and other things after getting a lot of criticism. Look, what I worry about is when the PPP ends, how many of those businesses will still be in operation and given the economic situation. And, you know, look, we're talking about the economy now. The real question is how quickly will we reopen up in a smart way and the economic effects of it. So I think the PPP has been very good for small businesses. It's been extremely helpful. But at some point, the PPP is going to end. Yep. And then what happens to those businesses and those employees that work for those businesses?
Right.
Well, and that's why I don't understand the run-up in the stock market. When you know, Randy asks a really good question about what happens when these programs run out. You look at where unemployment is. You look at, I think we broke a record in the U.S. for consumer savings, I saw this morning on the ticker. That doesn't speak to the stock market going up like it has. That one has really, really befuddled me.
I think the stock market, Sean, has discounted the next quarter, the second quarter already. I think they know the GDP number is going to be awful. I think they know the unemployment rate is going to be high. I think what they're trying to do is forecast how this reopening is going to go. And probably the biggest question mark as we go into the fall is, will there be another flare up in the virus, and where might it flare up, and are we prepared with testing and with you know, medical equipment, PPEs, et cetera, in the case we do have a flare? We're not going to have a vaccine widely available by the fall, and we all know that.
Right. Okay. All right. Guys, we got to switch gears here because, Pam, I want to bring you back in on the support that is in that HEROES Act that Senators Grassley and Klobuchar are trying to carve out and bring it forward as support for the ethanol industry. Feels like something that that needs to happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's an understatement, right? And I think you had the news at the beginning of the show about, you know, the continuation of the oil industry pressing for waivers even back to 2015 is crazy. So, yeah, something needs to be done. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but I think the discussion we've just had is critical. The economy and the health crisis have to be on parallel tracks, and we can't just all of a sudden now say, okay, we're beyond this, and let's just get back to work, even if it's not safe. Get back into the economy. Don't wear masks because I still hear people saying this is a hoax. I've made a couple trips out myself to spend some money this last week, and I'm horrified about the crowds and nobody obeying the social distancing and you know, people being called, you're just a snowflake if you wear a mask. I think the big thing it all boils down to is the health crisis, and we don't have a handle on it yet.
Right. Okay. You know, it jumped from health crisis, and the economic consequences were ignored when we shut it down, and now we're trying to bring the economy back into focus, and it's just really difficult to do. We'll wrap up the free for all next.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Pam Johnson, Randy Russell, and Sean Haney on the briefer all and on the phone. This is Mark in Northeast Iowa. Mark, thanks for calling AgriTalk. What's on your mind, man?
Yeah, thanks, Chip. Hey, I just filled out my CFAP form. If you go to farmers.gov, and you can click on the CFAP area there, and it takes you right to that. You can download the Excel spreadsheet. It literally took me like 15 minutes to get that all filled out there, because I had my records from the cattle that I sold, the cattle that I had in inventory. I just plugged those numbers in and basically hit print. Took it up there this morning. I just left the office up there. And I feel so bad for the guys and gals working in the FSA office, because they are just so backlogged. There's literally two people in that office, which there's usually, eight or nine in there that are working. The rest of them are working remotely. They're trying to certify acres, and then you throw this on top of them. Yeah. We need those folks back in the office, and they need to be in there starting Monday, and get back to work here. The poor gal, she said, I just don't know when we're going to get all this stuff through.
Right. Right. Yeah. And the timeliness on this is very important, Mark. The reason that they are pushing this through and pushing the sign up through is because there's an understanding that we need some financial assistance in rural America and on the farm. And so if a lack of staffing creates some delays, well, it creates delays in getting that funding out there too. So,
right. Yeah. Right. And then it throws. So now my crop insurance stuff, because I might certify my acres and then I send that to the crop adjuster, that pushes that back too. So, I don't know what that's going to look like for some of these deadlines. And, we need those folks back in the office, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Mark, didn't you tag me in a tweet here not that long ago about the Iowa cattlemen leading the charge on cash negotiations, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I did. I am very privileged to be the District 6 director of Iowa Cattlemen's Direct Association, which is Northeast Iowa. We've had policy on Iowa Cattlemen's Association for many years that we want 50% cash negotiated trade. This year with the COVID and the issues in the market, we want to regain leverage in that Fed market. And so we pushed policy for 50% cash negotiated trade at the plant level. So every plant, doesn't matter if you're Liberal Kansas or Tama, Iowa, and with a 14-day delivery. The fun thing about that is we did that. We had Grassley on board with that, and he took it and wrote a bill and put that in the Senate on the Senate floor. And so it's been an exciting time, but I think we have some traction here, and we need all cattle producers. I don't care if you're a member or not. We need all cattle producers to be engaged in this conversation going forward.
Absolutely, Mark. Well said. We had Brad Coima on yesterday. I don't know if you heard that or not, but
yeah, I did.
He represented the Iowa Cattlemen's Association very well. We going to get a celebrity steer show in, bud?
Yeah, I hope so. And I'd be great to have you on the halter of one of the steers there. So
I'd love to do it.
Yep.
Love to do it. Mark, we got to jump and get back onto a couple of other things, but thank you so much for the call, man.
Yep, thank you. Have a good one.
You bet. All right. Randy, what else is on? You know what? No, I got to do this. I got to go to Haney. Haney, what are you talking about on Mexico asking for details of the U.S. trade deal with China?
Yeah, okay. So if you remember, it was a huge issue in Canada when the USMCA text was released. There's a part in there where basically all three parties have to disclose to each other when they do a trade deal with a non-market economy. In Canada, there was a lot of outrage because essentially we took it as the fact that we have to get approval from the U.S. if we were to do a deal with China. Mexico is requesting now the details and the intentions of this U.S.-China trade deal. And they need, those details need to be released to all three parties. I've talked to Carlo Dade from the Canada West Foundation this morning, trade expert, and he says that not a surprising move, it's basically Mexico testing the clause and trying to set a bit of a precedent on what that transparency will look like going forward for the USMCA. So, interesting.
All right. Yeah, Randy, what's your take on that?
I wish the Mexican government luck. My guess is that I find it hard to believe that whatever deal we're doing with the Chinese is going to be dictated by the Mexican government, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Well, this is why I think Mexico's doing it, they're afforded the details according to the USMCA text. So we'll see what those details look like, if there's any at all.
Yep. Well, I'd also add on that the Mexican probably farm economy benefits from our trade deal with China, given the North American market that we have in agriculture and the food industry. So I think they probably have several of their own growers that benefit because of the trade that we have across border between the United States and Mexico, and some of that ends up in China.
Yeah. Guys, we've only got about 30 seconds left, and I want to get to Randy on this. Randy, have you noticed any of the supply side disruptions out there on the East Coast?
Quite a bit. I go into my local grocery store every single day to check what the status is, and I've been doing that for the last 10 weeks. We still have some spot shortages on meat and poultry. It's gotten a little better. I think we're about 80% capacity year over year on pork, about 86% capacity on beef. I think we'll still see some spot shortages in the summer, throughout the summer, but it has definitely gotten better, Chip. Definitely gotten better.
Good. Randy, thank you so much for your time today and all your insights. We really appreciate it, and I know the AgriTalk listeners do too.
Thanks, Chip. Enjoyed being with you. Pam, good being with you and Sean as well.
Absolutely. Pam and Sean, thank you so much, you guys. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, cheers, everybody.
Yep, thanks.
All right, thank you so much. That wraps up this week's Free for All. We'll do it again next week, of course. You got to come back this afternoon. We are getting Pork Week started. Christine McCracken from Rabo Agri-Finance will be here to talk all things pigs and pork.